Welcome to Insight Outlook. In this podcast, we will be discussing the current events taking place in Iran. I am Michelle, one of the historians from Asian Outlook.
Hi, I'm Fatima. I'm another co-historian of Asian Outlook.
And we will be hosting today's podcast with a special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Of course. Before we start, I actually would like to say hello to your audience and also say a big thank you to you guys for hosting me and giving me this platform. I'm very grateful. I am Saida Mogorbani, an assistant professor at the School of Management in Binghamton University. I was born and raised in Iran and left Iran 9 years ago when I was 26.
Thank you so much. So to start off, we want to give a brief overview about what's happening in Iran. The morality police in Iran has been harassing and beating women for not complying to certain dress code standards, specifically with the hijab. One death in particular has sparked multiple protests against the morality police. This police has been around for a while, but they have been more aggressive in recent events. Would you be able to talk a little bit about the history of the police and their contribution to the protest?
Sure. The morality police, aka the hijab police, have constantly been harassing women since the Islamic Revolution in 1979. So they have been around since day zero of this regime. They arrest women for wearing inappropriate hijab, and I'll explain what inappropriate means in a second. But yeah, so they arrest women for this reason, and they enforce other restrictions on women and minorities in Iran. They are a part of Iran's law enforcement forces and are mostly responsible for how women dress on the street. The way the women dress is not their only concern. They can easily find so many other reasons to arrest women and harass them, such as a woman walking down the street alongside their boyfriend, or even alongside their dog. They can, like, that's a valid reason for them to arrest women and men also. And sometimes they might, they can easily arrest a person of LGBT community if they visibly show it. So there are so many reasons these people might easily arrest people and take them to custody. And as I promised, I'm gonna explain what inappropriate means. So in Iran, because based on the Islamic rules, you have, as a woman, you have to cover your entire body, and the only place that can be shown is your face. And also you shouldn't wear too much makeup to obey kind of those Islamic rules. So your entire body should be covered, nothing should be shown, and your hair also should be covered. So even if a small portion of your hair is out of your headscarf, it can be a disobedience in their, you know, their rules. So this is what they do, and to make Iranian women's life such a torture. Yes.
So that being said, recent news has brought up a specific death that occurred in September. In September, there was one death of a female named Mahsa Amini, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
So based on this death, what can you tell us more about this individual and their story? Why did they end up being harassed by the morality police?
Sure. But before I explain the exact incidents of Mahsa Amini and everything happened after that, I actually would like to explain more a little bit about this morality police to kind of put things into perspective. This morality police is a part of the government. And as you know, like we all know that Iran's regime is a dictatorship, is a brutal dictatorship. And They have these this like different components to make sure that people are scared, people are afraid of the government, and they want to make sure that they are constantly spreading fear everywhere in their country to be able to govern the people. And if you look at the dictatorships, without that fear, that dictator cannot rule or govern. So this fear is actually necessary and has been always necessary in Iran. Different kind of, I don't know, like different operations such as morality police and some other operations to make sure that fear always exists in the society. And obviously women are their main target. And so there are so many restrictions for women. And I want to like give some of those examples to your audience to put things into perspective and kind of show them how life can get very difficult for women in Iran, and also people of minorities and people of LGBTQs in Iran. So for example, in Iran, a woman must cover their body and hair in public. So if they do not believe in Islam or hijab, they should live a double life. And they cannot travel outside of country without their dad's or husband's permission. They cannot divorce their husband, even if he beats her to death. They cannot have the custody of their kids unless their husband gives that permission. Fathers can beat or kill. Yes, you heard it right. They can kill their daughter without facing any penalties other than 1 to 2 years in prison, which is very ridiculous. And just listening to this is just very harrowing, let alone living in that environment. And then they cannot sing, swim, ride a bike, ride a motorcycle in public. They cannot go to stadiums. They cannot be a judge or a president. They cannot hold higher rank position in the government. After they get married, their husband can stop them from working, and that's legal. The husband can easily do it. And because of the hijab rule, there are so many restrictions for like athletes. They cannot attend world competitions. And this is a list of things. It's a very short list. If you dig deeper, you're going to find a lot of other things that women in Iran have to obey. As I said, there isn't any end to this list, unfortunately. The women in Iran have always been very unhappy about this, and they have been really tired about whatever the government is forcing them to do. So what happened in about like 40 days ago, Mahsa Amini, who was a 22-year-old Kurdish woman, was by this morality police, was arrested in Tehran and taken to their office, which they usually call it a re-education center for, I don't know, like just like teaching women how to dress properly. And they took her to this offices and they beat her to death. And after her death, they claim her death happened due to a congenital heart problem, which is ridiculous. And then because women of Iran were already super angry about the whatever what had been happening in Iran, plus this incident, thousands of Iranians have taken to streets in peaceful protests. But as it was expected in dictatorship, you can't peacefully protest. So the government started killing unarmed protesters, and they started invading schools and university to arrest students. And since then, they have killed so many people. And among those people were teenagers and children. The death toll has been reported more than two, like been compared to be more than 200 protesters, including more than 23 confirmed children who have been killed by the regime. And among them were two teenagers, two 16 years old girls, one of them, Nika Shahkarami, and the other is Sorina Ismailzadeh. So they took these two girls to custody. They harassed them. They beaten them to death. And when Nika's family received her dead body, her face was destroyed, completely destroyed, and completely unrecognizable. And at the end, they said, "We didn't do anything," and they didn't accept that they killed these people. And this has been going on and on for a long time. The thing is, the people never had enough strength and enough power to rise, but the younger generation is braver than us. They are braver, they want freedom, and they have started their fight. So that's why this uprising is happening, and we are seeing what is happening in Iran is just very brave. Yes.
Sorry, I just wanted to add, I was reading up on a couple articles, and as far as I know, the death toll of like protesters that have been killed was at least 233 as of like October 15th or something, and I just found that to be completely like outrageous, because like these are teenagers, like you said, these are children, and like... It just pains me to read the stories. So like to be actually living in that community, I can only imagine what those people must be.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, because Iran's regime is a dictatorship, whatever they report or whatever report we hear is not going to be accurate. They are really good at lying all the time. So it is impossible for us to know the exact number, since the authorities also restricted and shut down the internet from this, like one of these protests. You probably remember in 2019, again, there was another uprising in 2019 in Iran because of economic reasons. And the government did the same thing. So they shut down the internet because they wanted to disconnect people of Iran from outside of Iran. They didn't want the reports to be released. And they assassinated more than 1,500 people in only 3 days. That's why we believe that this 200-something number of protesters that have been killed is definitely a lot higher than that number. We are sure it is higher. They're just hiding the truth because this has been happening all the time. So we definitely, the number is higher than that. The actual number is higher than that. And we expect the actual death toll to be a lot higher this time, considering the history of this regime. But the thing is, we believe this time is different. First of all, this time, our women are leading this protest. Their slogan is different. Women like freedom. They want freedom. The protests are different. And the younger generations are a lot braver than us, the older generations. And this uprising is an uprising against decades of repression. And people in Iran are angrier than ever and a lot stronger than ever. And their message is clear and bold. They don't want this Islamic Republic anymore. They want freedom. They want equality. And they don't want this Islamic Republic. And they want this regime to go away. Yeah, so this has been happening since 40 days ago.
It seems that the morality police has been around for a really long time, but we're only now hearing of these horrific stories. But I'm sure, like you said, there has been many other events where they were just swept under the rug. But do you think the morality police has changed over the course of different regimes and governments?
I would say this morality police have always had different names since day one of this Islamic revolution. They had different names, but the goal was always the same thing: spreading fear, restricting women, and kind of giving them dress codes, telling them what to wear and telling them how to behave in the street. So the goal was always the same, and depending on what era, their you know, the actions could have been like a little bit more aggressive or less aggressive, but they have always existed, they have always been there. And yeah, so like I don't really remember any time in Iran that this morality police didn't exist. So they have always been there. But in recent years, because of the new kind of like a stricter or like kind of like extremist kind of president, these morality police have been taken too seriously. So they have more power and of course more budget. They've been performing more and more aggressive than before. Yeah, so it's very sad to talk about this.
I understand it's probably a difficult topic to talk about. Even reading the articles was difficult for us. Like hearing it on social media was very different than hearing it in than reading about it online. That being said, why do you think the newer generation have been taking more initiative during protests? Because as you said earlier, back then in 2019, I believe it was the Bloody November was the name that they received it. We didn't see that much younger generation, probably because of the issue, but I'm not sure, to be honest. But back to my question, why do you think the newer generation has been taking more initiative in these current protests?
Because see, like in our generation, or let's go back a little bit further. So our parents were very young when the Islamic Republic happened. They were obviously very fearful of that regime, this current regime, and they kind of imposed that fear to the next generation, who were us, right? And the only thing we could do was either say nothing and building a life in Iran and be happy with whatever we had, which was very limited, or flee the country, which I did, and most of my friends did. But the newer generation were very young, and they had a whole life, their whole life ahead of them. They don't want to live a petty life, and it's not possible for all of them to leave the country to find a better life somewhere else. And when they see this, they you know, they are different. They don't want to accept destiny and fate. They want to build their destiny and fate. They are different. They have more courage. They are braver, and they know what they want from their lives. And, you know, it's dictatorships don't work with these people. They are well educated. Social media is helping them to understand what's happening around the world. And they're not like us that would follow things just because we are being told to follow things. This newer generation have so many resources available on hand to educate themselves and learn what is right and wrong. They know enforcing religious rules is wrong. They have to have the free. They should have the freedom of choosing whatever they want. That's the main thing that is making them different from us. With this different attitude, definitely the government should also be different. You know, you can't rule newer generation or govern newer generation using outdated rules. And also women in Iran are more and more educated than, you know, two generations ago. They go to school, they get education, they study, they know what real rights like freedom is, or their rights should be. So they're willing to fight for it. And it's not like 20 years ago that women would, you know, be happy with whatever they were offered. No, they want to have equality. They want to have freedom and the same privilege as men. And whatever is happening in Iran right now is because of this. Women now know what they want and they're fighting for it.
Yeah, I think you're exactly. I think that what you said about how the younger generation now has like more resources, I think that definitely probably plays a big role into what is happening now, because they are realizing the issue and having more courage because of all that they learned. You also mentioned a little bit about social media. Do you think the access to social media has also pushed and opened up the mindset of this younger generation to take more initiative and action?
Of course. The first reason I believe so is because what the government does right after the first protest, they shut down the internet because they're afraid of the social media. They are afraid of outside world. They don't want this generation, they don't want the people to be connected to outside world, because knowing what's going on outside of Iran brings awareness, brings knowledge to people, and that's scary for them, that's scary for the regime. And of course, like people, like younger generation is learning a lot. They not only learn about the culture, about the different sciences through social media, through internet, through different platforms. They can also learn the lifestyle or the rights other women, other people have outside of Iran. And it's impossible to convince them to just be okay and be happy with whatever they have or being offered when they can see other women in their, like, at the same age as them have a lot higher than, you know, they have, right? So social media, I think, has been playing a very important role in kind of bringing awareness to women around the world. And like, if you look at this uprising also, I'm sure the social media is spreading this news around the world, and it's going to bring awareness to other societies as well. Like, women have always been struggling with their rights, and in Iran, like, yeah, of course, like, the struggles in Iran are different from the struggles we have in America. We might fight for abortion right, or we might have like a Me Too movement, abortion right movement, or a salary gap movement, income gap movement. But in Iran, they're fighting for some basic, you know,
basic human rights.
Yeah, basic human rights, exactly. So they are fighting for basic human rights, and but we all are struggling, and achieving that equity and equality takes ages. And we definitely, like, whatever is happening in Iran is gonna be, you know, is gonna be shown or is gonna be exposed to other women around the world, and it's gonna bring awareness to those women as well. So this is how social media works. It's making people more and more aware of their surroundings, their like the other parts of the universe, and that's good. That's I think the social media this time has a huge role in this uprising. Like in 2019, we still had social media, but we were not well aware of, you know, the positive aspects of it when the uprising happened. And then again in 2009, when the Green Movement happened in Iran, the social media was not dominant everywhere. You know, not everybody had access to social media. So if you look at the uprising and uprisings in different countries, you can see how the role of social media is becoming bigger and bigger. And I definitely believe, I strongly believe, this time is different, and social media is playing an important role. And it is also connecting the people outside of Iran to the people inside of Iran. And we have been showing more support this time because we are staying connected, and we are using our platforms as much as we can to raise awareness. Yeah, so these are the changes that social media has been kind of helped us to make.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. We've seen changes in social media from back then to now. As you said, like, back then not everyone had access to cell phones, to the internet, but now that it's more prominent, like, these issues come to light much quicker. I remember the reason I found out about it was because of, like, I was on social media and I saw someone share a post about it. And now recently it's been coming up on my feed a lot more, so I've been wanting to read more articles about it. And one key article I found had a picture of protesters, and it had men, women, children, like teenagers. It had like all types of people included. And I want to tie this to my next question. You mentioned how all these groups are coming together, men, women, children, and teenagers, and it's like so impactful. I think the fact that their chant is woman, life, freedom makes the message even more powerful. But like, how do you feel about that? Having all these groups come together to fight for like just a natural human right for these women. Like, how do you feel this message becomes more powerful because of them?
I actually think this message is very powerful because I honestly believe this is going to be one of the biggest women's right movement in the history, especially because it's happening in one of the most conservative locations on this planet. So Middle East is very conservative. They have always been very conservative toward women. And a movement happening in that location, having this slogan, women, life, freedom, is just is like a miracle. And definitely everybody should take it seriously, because it's not just about women in Iran anymore. It's about women around the world. And I'm sure this movement is going to continue, and it's going to inspire so many other women around the world to start fighting for their freedom, because we still have a long way to equity and to find that freedom. So this movement in Iran, considering the location it's happening, is going to be a huge inspiration to so many other women around the world to fight for their freedom, to be strong enough whenever injustice happens to them. As I said, that slogan is clear enough. It's very unique. We have had like human rights movement, but none of them were mainly focused. The fact that it's happening in Iran, it's very important. And I'm sure it's going to help a lot of women around the world to be inspired and fight for their rights before they start relaxing and just sit down. And we still have a big fight in front of us everywhere. It doesn't matter where we live. We have to fight for our freedom, for our equality, whatever the challenges, we have to fight for it. And I'm sure this is going to be a big inspiration for every woman on this planet.
Yeah, I think you summed it up beautifully. It's a powerful movement, and ultimately it's going to bring up wonderful changes.
So while you're talking about how like the different groups are coming together for this movement, I was wondering if you think with this movement, this might mean some type of new change for other groups, for other minorities in terms of religion, culture, or the LGBT community. Do you think this could be potentially the start of some new change for other groups as well?
Of course, yes, it will definitely start new changes for other minorities as well. You know, if you look at this movement, you can see, although the focus initially and even now is on women's rights, but everybody in Iran society and around the world is supporting this movement. It's not just like women being on the streets or like women chanting for their rights. No, everybody is cooperating. Everybody is participating. When you look at the demonstrations around the world outside of Iran, everybody is included. From minority groups, from LGBTQ groups, and nobody is excluded, because our point, or Iranian people's, goal is to not have a government that is based on a specific group or religion. They want freedom for everybody, and they want everybody to enjoy their life, no matter which group they are from. Because that has been the goal of this movement, I think a new government, a change in the government, is gonna make the life of every community a lot better than whatever they are right now. It's gonna be a very positive change in everybody's life, no matter which group they are.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's like in other countries, we're also seeing rise of like women's rights movements occurring. We recently saw some here in the US actually. But what do you think people here can do? Like, what do you think Binghamton students can do to help this crisis? Like resources, sites they can contribute to?
One thing that is really important, that knowing the fact that no action is too small. So every action counts, and like every change happens because of so many different small actions. So whatever people can, they should definitely not refrain it, and they should definitely do. I've seen like students share different posts or stories on Instagram, on their social platforms, and some of them might feel it's not impactful, but they're wrong. It is. It actually, every action counts. I would say students in Binghamton can educate themselves about whatever is happening in Iran and educate the people around them. If they have any platform, they can share with their followers their knowledge with about Iran. They also can talk about the, you know, this uprising, this protest, about what women or people of Iran really want. And if any demonstration is happening or, like in their city or close to their city, if they can, they can like participate in those demonstrations and chant with us. That really is something I think the students in Binghamton can do to help us out and be the voice of people from Iran. But the most important thing is educating themselves, and educating the people around them is going to be very helpful, because the people of Iran want to be heard. They want everybody around the world to know why these are happening and why what they exactly want.
Thank you so much for shedding light on this situation with us today. Unfortunately, we have to bring this to a close, and I think you tied it together perfectly. Like, I think we as students who have almost unlimited access to the internet should help in spreading awareness. Most teenagers or young adults, or almost everyone, has access to the internet. Therefore, we should do our part in sharing these stories, because the situation is really upsetting. So I want to thank you for coming and taking the time out of your day to come talk to Michelle and I and our audience. I think it's been really inspiring to hear about you think about the situation.
I also would like to thank you guys for having me. It was really enjoyable to talk to you guys. I'm very grateful for this opportunity. I hope it was insightful enough for your audience and to trigger their curiosity to know more about this, what is happening in Iran. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for coming. I think everyone here, both me, Fatima, and our listeners, definitely learned a lot, and hopefully everyone can spread this message, because it will greatly help, because no matter who you're reaching, whether it's one person or 300 people. That being said, thank you again so much for coming to our podcast. And that concludes this episode of Inside Outlook. This is Michelle Chan, from one of the historians from Asian Outlook. And
this is Fatima Gonzalez, the other co-historian of Asian Outlook.
And we are signing off. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.